Hello there, and thank you for coming on board again here today for episode number 236. Today's podcast, as you can see, is brought to you by ACT Entertainment. ACT is North America's leading supplier of the entertainment industry's principal products to professionals across six different end markets, including professional lighting fixtures and lighting control equipment, audio, video, fiber, and power distribution, cables, connectivity, metalwork, custom manufacturing, and design. With ACT Entertainment, you get the industry's top performance products, as well as service, education, and engineering support to bring every entertainment professional concept to reality. Visit ACT's website at www.actentertainment.com. And today's podcast is also brought to you by GearSource. GearSource was founded in 2002 with a mission to help global live event businesses to move gear around the planet. Since that time, the company has transacted in more than 100 countries, selling almost $250 million in sound, lighting, staging, and video gear. Now, GearSource has completely evolved its platform for massive global growth, enabling 14 different localized currencies, payments held in escrow to protect buyers and sellers, AI-powered logistics behind a new global logistics brand, Gear Moves, and so much more. Visit GearSource.com today and expand your access to global markets for your gear and global gear for your markets. Some days my job is more fun than other days. Today is one of those days. I'm really looking forward to today, and I'll tell you why in a couple of minutes. But first, I wanted to just mention, if you haven't seen them already, and you're watching this live right now, this week we launched both Josh Allen, who's an incredible designer who's created a really cool firm. We've launched his episode number 233, and also the brilliant Swami Richard Kadena on episode 234. Both of those were really fun. Both were very informative as well. And we're starting to get some smarter people in, I guess. What's going on here? And challenging me for sure, asking or answering questions that I don't always understand. But no, it's been amazing. I'm super proud and grateful to have the quality of people that we've got. Yesterday, I recorded number 235, which will be out probably, I think it's next week, next Wednesday, probably April, whatever that is, 10th maybe. That's an excellent one. Matthias Henricks, who is the head of, I believe, lighting engineering or product design or whatever at Elation. Super smart dude, spent a lot of time at Martin running their console division. And now is at Elation and has been bringing out all these incredible new Elation products, and also has had his hand in Obsidian, of course. And so, yeah, really great episode. I hope you like it. But for this week, listen to 233 and 234, both really good. And yeah, I'm grateful, like I said. So, as I said, some days are better than others. Today is a superb day. Today's guest has a resume. I don't even want to get into his resume because it's crazy, but I'm going to name a few bands, or acts or clients. Poison, Robert Palmer, Queensryche, Tesla, Luis Miguel, Bruce Hornsby, Andrea Bocelli, Madonna, Rush, the Allman Brothers, Band M. I don't even know who that is. Shania Twain, Josh Groban, Disturbed, NFL, Salesforce, throw that one in there. That's a weird one. And yes, Metallica. So talk about career spans. Dan Brown started his legendary career path more than 45 years ago. In fact, this year marks Dan's 30th year working with the mega act Metallica, where he remains their show director today, while delivering the best show he can to their massive audiences around the world. Longevity in this industry isn't by accident, and I tell people this all the time. You know, if you've been here that long, you're doing something right. Dan is no exception. So please join me and welcome Dan Brown. Hey Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing very, very well. Thanks very much. And
Good to see
yourself?
you. You look well. You look
I'm
well.
trying to be.
You look rested. You're in between massive stadium shows, I think, aren't you?
That
Or
is very true,
legs,
yes.
big
Yeah,
legs.
we
Yeah.
that part of my life starts back up at the end of May over in Europe. So
Oh,
gearing up, a
cool.
lot of work going on to get ready for that. And I have some corporate clients and doing some work with them, but a lot of that's on Zoom, so I've been at home and able to enjoy a little bit of downtime.
Very cool. And you're in Washington somewhere, aren't you?
Camas, Washington, the hotbed of the entertainment industry.
So I'm from Calgary, Canada, just across the border there. And
Okay.
so yeah, I've spent a whole bunch of time in my youth in Washington, but I live in South Florida. I have a house up there in Alberta, where I go for the warm months now. I finally got smart and I just go up for the warm months. I don't even ski much anymore. So, but yeah, I'm not that far away. I
Yeah,
used
I'm
to get your TV
transitioning a little bit
channels.
away, little transitioning away from the skiing thing too. Just
You
cold
know,
and getting older, and I've had a great run with it, so it
me
all
too.
works out.
Like, I started when I was probably 9 or 10 years old, you know, growing up in Western Canada. It's just one of the things you did, that and hockey.
Right.
And I ski very well, but now that I'm turning 60 this year, like my legs just don't do the same stuff for the same length of time. And so now I find myself nearing epic wrecks, you know, because I'm doing the
Wow.
stuff I know how to do and my legs are giving out, you know. So
I didn't start early. I firmly believe you should start anything, any kind of a risk thing like that before you understand the word mortgage. I did not. I started in my 30s and I've had a great time with it. And I too, I've got a couple of years on you and I'm crossing into a time where it's like, well,
Yeah.
what do we want to do here? So kind of in
Well, you
that state.
know, I still have lots of friends up there who are in their late 60s, even 70s, who still ski 100 days a year. And
Yeah.
if you're doing that, it's okay. But for me to
Yeah.
go up there like in November or December for a week and try and do 3 or 4 days of skiing, by the fourth day, my legs are just kind of starting to feel normal. But
Yeah.
you know, it's just dangerous. It's dangerous at some point, right? It's why
I know that. I know that feeling.
so many of these people my age and older, you know, get injured or die skiing. You know, it's because we forget that we're not 30 anymore and we can't do the same stuff.
And in my case, I was never as good as I thought I was, anyhow.
Well, is any of us? You know, I thought I was a world champion, you know, Olympic skier or whatever, but not so much. Yeah. I'm decent, but again, even though I live right there, like my house is right there where all the great ski areas are, very close to Lake Louise and all that stuff.
There's some beautiful skiing up there. That's where Elvis has barbecues with God. That's a
Yeah.
pretty place. That is a pretty
I'm
place there.
gonna have
Sunshine
to
Village, I think it is. That's a
yeah.
beautiful place up
Yeah,
above
I've
the tree line.
spent
Woo!
loads of time at Sunshine Village. I broke my leg one time skiing, and it was at Sunshine Village, and I was about 15, so it's a long time ago. I was probably 13 or 14, actually. And I think I had just discovered marijuana and combining marijuana with skiing. And so I was pretty wasted, and they had just that week opened a run called Teepee Town. And so me and my friend, who was also wasted, decide we're gonna go for it. And you know, I had just gotten brand new skis, and so I always just get the bindings, you know, pretty much wound up as tight as they can go so that the skis don't come off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I went through one of these things. It was blizzarding too. It was a full whiteout when we got off the lift. And I went through one of these things going probably 45 miles an hour or something. Hit some rocks, started tumbling. Of course, my skis
Whoa.
stayed on. So I broke my leg and then my knee started twisting, because the skis were still on. So I was a mess. I was in a cast for, I don't know, 6 months or something. I've never really been the same since then. Still, my leg, you can tell that it's been broken badly and stuff. But so yeah, number one, I never skied wasted again, I don't think. And even though I stopped doing that when I was like 20 anyways, but yeah, I just learned some things, slow down a little bit, perhaps. I probably didn't do that then, but certainly now. Yeah. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, and I can't keep you until May when you go back out with Metallica. So let me dive into it a little bit. Since I've
You
never had
bet.
you on, I like to, I like to talk about really kind of how you got into the business a little bit. That's kind of important to me because, obviously our industry's looking for new people all the time, and people love to hear these stories of, back in the day when we didn't go to school for production management or lighting design or sound engineering, it just kind of happened, right? Like, some of the stories are hilarious. Jake Berry's probably one of the funniest, but lots of funny ones. Chaz Harrington, I think he was sitting on his front step drinking beer or something, and somebody drove up in a pickup truck and said, "Hey, jump in. I got a gig for you. Come work at the studio." And next thing you know, he's a recording engineer in a studio. So, how'd you get into it?
That's a interesting question. I was a kid. I used to go to concerts. It's what I did. I went to concerts. The group of people I hung out with went to concerts. It's what we did. We went to concerts, and saw incredible shows. It was really kind of, I think of it as sort of a whole different time in the business when it was a lot about music and stuff, and went to see everything from Yes to King Crimson to Cat Stevens
This is the 70s, I'm guessing then.
This is back in the 70s. So back in 75, I was in a place that no longer exists called Milwaukee County Stadium, and Pink Floyd was playing. And I'll try to keep the story a little bit abbreviated because it's a pretty long story.
That's
Anyhow, it
the
was
real Pink
100.
Floyd too, right? When
That's the
it was
real
still
one.
Roger Waters and all of them.
It was 100% humidity, 100, 90 degrees, 100% humidity day. Everybody's getting baked. It's the old days when crowd management was sort of a, we'll put some plywood up and that'll keep them contained. And everybody's lined up to go in the stadium. They open the gates to the stadium. The Milwaukee County Sheriff's decided going to a rock show was cause for search and seizure. So there were tons of arrests. They went through all this stuff with people. That all got thrown. It went to the Supreme Court and got thrown out. Anyhow, there's a huge thunderstorm coming in. They try to start the show early, so the band wanted to get the show in. They started playing the stuff that would become the Wish You Were Here album. And this storm is coming. You can it's a Midwest thunderstorm. The drops are a size of silver dollars, and so they're playing, and people start pulling Visqueen over the stage right PA stack. And I'm watching all this go on with my keen mind, and I'm thinking, who does this? How do they decide this? That looks like a really cool job. And this guy's got no shirt on, shorts and cowboy boots and hair down his back. And this is 1975, and I'm like, how would you, what do you, how do you work in this stuff? What, who decides where all this goes? Like, who, how do they do this? And anyhow, the thunderstorm hits, they stop playing. The thunderstorm clears as it happens in the Midwest after an hour or whatever it is. The band comes out, plays the entire Dark Side of the Moon album in its entirety, and as they sing the line, "I'll see you on the dark side of the moon," the clouds part and there's a full moon.
Oh
So
my
perfect,
goodness. Wow.
so perfect that I couldn't figure out how they projected the moon up there, and it
Wow,
took me a
that is
minute to
cool.
realize this was just a bizarre phenomena.
That
And
is wild. That is
if
wild.
you anybody who was there will tell you that story if they were capable of remembering it. This
So
is 75.
here's a funny
So,
story. One of my first ever concerts was Supertramp, Crime of the Century
love them,
in
love them.
Calgary at the McMahon Stadium. And my sisters took me, I think, or my sister and her boyfriend or something. And there was a band on, Atlanta Rhythm Section, I think, was on, and the skies opened up. And so that Visqueen, instead of going over the PA or whatever, was coming up off the ground and became trampolines and became an umbrella and then became fire to warm people up at one point. And I mean, I'm watching all of this along with the clouds of weed and everything else flying around. And I was like, whoa, I like concerts. This is cool. So then a Canadian band came on called Trooper, and they do this song, "We're Here for a Good Time, Not a Long Time." And it's something about the sun is shining. And so the sun came out, and everybody went,
Wow,
whoa, this is so
that's
cool, you
fantastic.
know? So it was a similar story during a similar time. It had to be probably 76, 77, I guess, when that one
So yeah, that
happened.
would have been a time period for that show. So anyhow, I had this thing where I went to school and in my home and any of those things. I grew up in a home where turn the stereo down was a regular cry. If I played my stereo too loud, my dad would go in the break in the basement and turn the breaker off to my bedroom. He had no use for any of it, thought I was crazy. And none of the no one ever said, well, if you're interested in that, you should do this or do that or anything like that.
Yeah, little did he
And
know, you'd end up with it in a career with Metallica, That's
so
pretty crazy.
shuffled off to do a little bit of time at school, didn't have any money, couldn't afford that. Had to find something to do, and I got involved doing concerts at school. Had a little bit of success, and I said, well, I'll go be a concert promoter. Now I'm 18 years old, 19 years old. I know nothing about business, money, leverage, finance. I have nothing. I just decided I'd be a concert promoter. Well, that didn't work out very well. Went home, started working. I worked in a factory so that I could eat. And started hanging out, and I'd already been hanging out. I knew how to help people move gear around and stuff from working, hanging out at free concert sites, and got involved in a club and ran the music end of that club. It was just basically a glorified bar. It was a 1,000-seat kind of old theater place with the seats removed and a dance floor put in, and which then became the floor for the rock shows. About the same size as the Fillmore is now in San Fran, 800,000 seats. And this was the halcyon days of clubs. Like everybody played clubs. The Police played for us three times. Dire Straits, Flock of Seagulls, Boomtown Rats. Faye McMahon was there. He's probably the oldest guy I know who still works in the business. And Faye
That's
was doing
crazy.
lights for the Rats at the time, and I did the club. And worked my way through the club, and then got a job at a small sound company, and that led to doing some tours with some pretty big acts. And I was just a kid, kind of, moving gear, doing this. Mixing monitors, mixing front of house, building distros, figuring out how to build a PA, doing those things. And then because of my work at the club, I got to know one of the local promoters and started doing when they had two shows booked, I did the second show and backing things up. And one thing led to the next. Eventually, I worked for that promoter. And I don't think you could take that path. I mean, I look at it and it's like I stuck my fingers in the wall, in the cracks in the wall, and started clawing my way up. Even at the club, I was always trying to make our show special. We had, favorite bands that came in, tried to make their show special, ended up going on the road for a little while with one of those bands that got signed to RCA Millennium Records, drove the truck, set up the gear, ran the lights or the sound, put the gear back in the truck, drove. We opened for Foreigner and Cheap Trick and Southside Johnny and things like that. But after two albums, they got dropped. And as happened back then, when that occurred, the band broke up. And just kept following the path wherever it led. Did 10 years at Summerfest in Milwaukee,
Which band was that? That first one that you were
that
talking
band was
about?
called Yipes. They were on
Yipes.
RCA Records. There was a band called Yipes out of Milwaukee that got signed to Jimmy Einer's label. Our record rep on the road with us, our promo guy, was Donny Einer. You might
Oh,
recognize the
Jesus.
name.
That's wild.
Chicago had a band called Off Broadway right in the same time period, kind of a power pop takeoff on a Cheap Trick sort of thing. And Detroit had a band called The Romantics. And The
Remember
Romantics
them.
got signed, did the best of those three acts. There was a little band out of Madison, Wisconsin, which is 90 miles from where I grew up. And certainly we knew all those guys and crossed paths. They had a drummer in the band named Butch Vig. So
Of
the
course,
music,
yeah.
the music world was pretty ripe and pretty awesome in that time period.
I didn't know Butch came from that area, and I didn't actually even really know that he started as a drummer. I knew him first as a producer and then as a drummer. And funny side story. So, I'm pretty close with the boys at Upstaging. And I get a call. I can't remember if it was Hud or Donnie called me up and said, "Hey, we're doing this corporate show in Grand Cayman. Do you want to come diving?" And I said, "Sure, I'll be part of the pretend crew." And it was a gig for like Gillette or something, and it was 100 contest winners for the band Garbage. So 100 contest winners were being flown onto the island, and it was just a concert for 100 people on the beach. And with full production and everything, Gillette spent a fortune. And so they would finish, working as much as Huddleston and Don Caron were doing. And we would walk around the back of the stage, jump in the water, and walk out a little ways. And you'd end up in 40, 50 feet of water, diving a wall or something. It was just beautiful. It was unbelievable. But I got to know Butch there. We went to, went snorkeling and stuff with him and Shirley, whatever her name is, and yeah, so
I'm
that was
very
fun.
close with Don and Robert.
Yeah,
And I knew Robert before he was Robert,
such nice
and
people.
they were always wonderful to me, and I'm very loyal to them. They were really wonderful to me when I was really, really a dumb kid, doing the thing with Yipes, opening for Cheap Trick and that whole thing.
Well, I'll tell you quickly because I don't want to keep talking. But so I moved to South Florida to work for Martin Lighting in the very early days of Martin Lighting. And I remember the first time I went to visit Upstaging, I called Huddleston and made an appointment. And this is 1991 or something. And called him, made an appointment. And I got there and I was so nervous because this is like a real rock and roll touring company, and I'm some schmuck with a little disco lighting company. And I get into John's office in Mundelein, and John says, "You want to go shopping?" And I said, "Sure." And he goes, "Cool, let's go." And so we go to some like outlet mall, and he convinces me to buy this real piece of crap thing that was kind of like an Apple Newton, but not really, like a Casio version of an Apple Newton. He convinces me to buy that. So I buy that thing, and then we go play golf or something. I mean, we had a whole day of just screwing off, doing nothing, and then ended up meeting Donnie and Robert, I think, later that day for dinner or whatever.
Of course.
It was one of the coolest days ever. It was just like such a they just put me under their wing and said, "You're one of us now,
Really good people.
Yeah, I've been friends with them ever since.
So I just kept following that path at around 1990, I was working for a promoter, doing a lot of shows. I was very fortunate that I did a series of dates, and the accountant I was working with sort of explained the facts of life to me in terms of my skill set and how much money I wasn't making. And it altered my life very much so. I ended up there was nothing more for me to do in Milwaukee. I couldn't really get to where I wanted to get to work-wise. Ended up going on the road. Scotty Ross. I had a good relationship as a promoter with Poison, did tons of shows with them, did their rehearsals. Dale left to go do Guns N' Roses, and Scotty called me up and said, "Hey, why don't, we love you. Why don't you come do this thing?" And at that point, I was looking to get out the door anyhow, and that led to about 10 years of touring.
So
And
what was the
then,
role though in that first was it Poison you said?
yeah, I was production manager with Poison.
Wow, straight in, huh? Nice. Scotty obviously trusted you.
Scotty's I could never say enough good things about Scotty
Yeah,
Ross.
he's a cool dude.
So we did that and did a couple of those things, and one thing led to the next, and a great relationship with Q Prime over the years, doing all tons of their bands. The only ones I didn't do were ones I either had a scheduling conflict or turned down, and it just was a great it was a great thing. It did about 10 years straight. I think for the 90s, every year I was 300 days away from home on my taxes.
Wow, Jesus.
And then I tried being in a building for a little while and did very su I was very successful at it, but that's way too much work for not enough money. I thought the hours on the road were bad. But
Yeah,
you
that's
work the
true, huh?
same hours in a building, at least I did at the level I was at, and you have to drive home at night.
Yeah.
And boy, that bus is that bus that you didn't like seems pretty attractive when you're
Yeah,
driving
yeah,
home
yeah.
after a 20-hour day.
No kidding.
And then just kept going and finally got to a point where I could do what I always wanted to do, which was really design shows and find great production partners to help me kind of help artists have a vision of the artist come to life in real time and do that whole thing. And along the way, picked up some corporate clients and did some fun things, figuring out I could translate some skills I have into a different world.
Yeah, that's interesting. So,
I wouldn't recommend the path I took to anyone. I tell all my friends' children when they say, "You have a really cool job." I say, "Yeah, go to law school. Get your law
yeah.
degree. You don't have to practice law, but then people work for you and you can do anything you want.
You know what,
Learn how to
though?
think."
I don't know that I completely agree with you because every lawyer I know wants my job or they hate their jobs, right? So I think
Yeah.
regardless of what your job is, you got to take the bad with the good. And
Right.
I think there's more good in most of what you do. And I'll say we, I mean we, the collective
Yeah.
industry, you know?
On my path, I got to do exactly what I wanted to do. I took a very difficult path to get there.
Yeah.
And I've worked with great people, almost to a, there's very few exceptions to that comment. There's very
Yeah.
few places I wouldn't say were just incredible people,
Yeah.
and had a great run. I got to do what I wanted to do, and I got
Which
to
is
see the world,
incredible.
and I got to, I learned how to do things I didn't even know I would be ever be capable of doing.
Yeah.
But it's been fantastic.
I spend a lot of time talking with people in our industry, either on the podcast or in different groups or whatever, about bringing in new young talent, because obviously I'm sure you have the same problem everybody else does, getting people.
Yeah.
One of the first problems is people think that it's a gypsy lifestyle. People think that I mean, some of it's true. You do live out of a suitcase. You are on the road 300 days a year sometimes, but you can make $100,000 a year very quickly. Especially now when people are being paid a
Yeah.
lot more money than they were being paid 5, 6 years ago. I think for young people who are undecided on what they want to do in their life, it's not necessarily a bad direction. Like I know a lot of kids going to law school who hate lawyers, hate the law, don't
Right.
want to be a lawyer, but it's just what they're doing, you know?
I don't think it's a bad direction if you're willing to work. I think
Yeah.
I don't wanna pontificate here, but I think the thing that I see that has shifted in the business when we collectively, we kind of the, I don't know, what a third generation group of people who I'm sort of part of, late 70s thing, maybe that's third or fourth generation, whatever the heck it is, people, there was an unstoppable attitude. Nothing was and we didn't order more equipment. We learned how to make things work, and we died doing it. I have a lot of friends who have limps and injuries and all sorts of things from doing
You're
that
so
work.
right. Yeah.
The life on the road is first work,
Yeah.
and if you're willing to adopt that attitude, you can be very, very successful. But it is, it's not easy. The show that Metallica is doing right now is this massive construction project that goes on, and it's a lot
Yeah.
of work.
Yeah, it's funny. My girlfriend always says she's British and from the same generation, and she says, part of the problem is we've wrapped our kids in, I forget what she says, bubble wrap and whatever. They all grow up thinking they're special and thinking they're going to be taken care of forever and all of that. And unfortunately, that creates a little bit of softness to where, we
Yeah.
come from a background, like you said, where we just find a way to get it done.
The equipment has changed dramatically too, and ordering
Yeah.
equipment has become a skill for a road person to have. I remember the day when somebody explained to me how digital audio was going to work. I
Yeah.
remember exactly where I was and that, wow, that's going to be unbelievable. And the advent of the Linn drum machine
Yeah.
and polyphonic synthesizers, right? And
Yeah.
And now all of that stuff is like a cornucopia of things you can order. And maybe you know how to use them and maybe you don't. But you saw that your friend Billy on some other tours got two of those, so you need four.
Yeah.
And I find that that's an odd thing in our business.
It is.
Is work and excellence and striving for excellence, just striving to be as good as you can be.
Yeah.
I think that is the people of my generation, when I think of Jake or Charlie or Dale.
A lot of guys who were striving for excellence.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the list is endless, whether it's Benny or whether it's Chris Lamb or whether it's Jerry Stickles or people pass down that passion for excellence, that thing of just trying to be as good as you could possibly be and always taking care of the show and making sure that what you did prepared the best environment possible for the artist on stage to present the best possible show that they could to their audience.
Yeah, that
and
makes
I
sense.
I think that was a passion at a level that made no sense. Why else would you work 22 hours a day and do all the other crazy things? And there were tons of, you know, nobody knew how to do a lot of the stuff that was going on. The guys who were doing the rigging, the guys who were putting the boxes together, the guys who were putting the lights together, like, well, how are we going to do this? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the roll call of names is tremendous. And I was fortunate as a promoter from 80 to 90 to work with all of these different folks and watch what they were doing and be inspired by that passion and that the show, this has to be correct. There has to be a rabbit in the hat when the magician puts his hand in to pull it out.
Yeah.
And nothing can stop that.
Yeah.
And,
well,
and
I mean,
and,
even
very
down
inspired by that.
Yeah. I mean, even down to the, like, I love the early days of audio where, you know, we need more sound and they built bigger boxes. You know, somebody went back to the shop and built bigger boxes
right.
that had
right.
4 18s in them instead of 2 18s or whatever,
right.
you know? And I loved that. Like, it was just, it was not only, you know, ingenuity or whatever you want to call it, but it was just like, let's get this done. You know, we got to do this.
And I think there were, you know, I'm very fortunate to work with, you know, with a great management company that was inspired to figure out how to make those things work. You know, kind of Jake and that whole tribe of people figured out Michael Tate.
Yeah.
And you know, the guys at Claire and that figured out how to make it, you know, they put the roll in rock and roll. You know, the wheel was invented a long time ago. Michael Tate figured out how we could use it in rock and roll.
Yeah.
And you know, it's what an awesome, inspiring thing, that whole story of how it came together, because nobody had a book.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was no book telling anyone how to do this. So, well, we'll try this. So that doesn't work. Let's do this. And I watched that from 80 to 90. And then when I went out, I was able to do that. And I've always been inspired with photography and architecture and other things, and finding the way people like Mark Fisher married those things together in the shows.
Yeah.
I just think that passion and inspiration, I don't know. I hope it still exists in our business.
It's all very different.
People coming up.
Yeah.
Feel the burn of the music. I think, you know, we get old and you get kind of a little jaded, maybe a little cynical. Right. And
I try not to, you know,
it's fun to be reminded why I started doing this.
Yeah.
You know, we just did a show, in DC, the guys just played a show, the Gershwin Awards, with Elton John and Bernie Taupin honored. And we were there at the show and I walked out of there and went, oh yeah, that's why I do this.
No kidding. Huh? Yeah.
That's cool. And
you know,
I hope that young people find that hook in the music, that it's not about the check. It's not about the $100,000 you can make. It's not about the bus. It's not about the party. It's all about those things. I'm quoting a line from the Journey, the old Journey video, Frontiers. You know,
yeah,
it's about all those things. But it's about the show and the music and creating something magical. When people go see it, they remember it, that you're talking about a Supertramp concert you saw X number of years ago, and I'm talking about a Floyd show that I saw in 1975. That's almost just about 50 years ago.
I have a friend who, his name is Randy. He's 65 now, I think. He's one of my best friends, and he still goes to almost every single concert that comes through, and he's got every ticket back to like Poplar Creek, and because he grew up in Chicago, and he's got every ticket from every concert he's ever been to. And you know, like he's seen Aerosmith like 30 times, and like every band, he's seen them from their earliest days till now.
I love that passion. I hope that the young people
It's
coming into our
incredible.
business have that fire.
And I worry about that. And you know, I know people think that I bag on young people all the time, and I don't, because you know, we're counting on you guys and
Right,
girls, like we're really counting
absolutely.
on you. But you know, I think you lose something. Like you got into this because of that Pink Floyd show. You know, I'm in this because in my early days, I was a musician, and then I met this guy named Bear from Brimstone Productions in Calgary. I don't know if you ever met Bear, but Bear was like the promoter in Calgary at the time. Big, huge guy, like you'd call a guy Bear, you know, furry face and stuff. And somehow I was working security for him at the arena shows there at the Calgary Corral. And, you know, I was a scrawny little guy with hair halfway down my back, and I have no idea how I was security, but I was. And I loved it. I was like, this needs to be my future. I want to be in this business. And I never toured, but you know, I've always been around either as a musician or supplier of some sort. Just love it. You know, it's just it. So I wonder, like us, we came into it because of a passion for the music and the show. I just wonder if people who went to school and for, you know, technical arts or whatever it's called these days, and I wonder if you come in with the same sort of passion. I just don't know. Like maybe they do. Like I know theater people still seem to have that same passion for the show and for the art and all of that stuff, but I don't know. It's hard to
Yeah,
say.
it seems to exist in theater. I've been fortunate to speak at some seminars at universities, and that group of people seems to have the fire for not only figuring out how we did things and how it came about, and what the vision of the future is. I also have a interestingly an ethical sense of duty to make sure that all of these kind of video manipulations and AI things and stuff like that are used correctly.
I was
And I
actually going to
find that
ask you about your thoughts on that.
really inspiring from these young people that they were thinking ahead along those lines, like, well, this technology could be used in some really bad ways. And at least the folks that I've seen in these seminars who talk about this are interested in protecting that. And I think that's awesome.
You know, it's an interesting topic, you know, and I love talking about it. I actually just had a couple pretty technical people on this week on the podcast that we had fairly lengthy conversations about it. One is you know, a product development engineer for Alation, and Richard Kadena. Do you know Richard Kadena?
I know Alation. I don't know Richard. I may have met Mitch Richard along the
Very
lines
technical
of the
guy.
book.
Very
Right.
technical guy, worked at High End for years, and now he goes around teaching stage electrics and safety and stuff. And just really, really super smart guy. But we've been talking about it, and you know, it's an interesting conversation because nobody wants to see it start to water down the business or take away jobs or anything like that, but it's coming. And so, you know, where does it fit? Where doesn't it fit? All of those things. Like I was talking to somebody a couple days ago who was telling me about a show that all of the images that were going up onto the LED screen behind the band were AI generated, like on the spot. You know, at the console, boom, they were being sent up to the wall, and there it was, and it was incredible. And you know, I don't know. Like, I mean, where whose jobs topple first? Which jobs go
I don't know.
down first?
It's another tool. A friend of mine was at a conference, and they were talking about AI and music, songwriting and whatnot. And he was hosting the panel, and he said that Don was in the audience, and he needed to steer the thing in an interesting direction. So he asked Don was to comment, and Don said, "It's a tool. Either learn how to use it, or be left behind." And I think these are tools, and we have to figure out how to use them in a way that's practical. I went and saw the ABBA show in London,
Yeah.
and
What'd you think of
the
that?
person I was with was part of the show, and he turned to me afterwards and looked, said, "Well, what do you think?" I said, "I don't know. I think I might have just seen the best concert I've ever been at, and it was a film."
Really? Wow, yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
And I mean, we're in the entertainment business, right?
Yeah.
So our job is to entertain, and the idea is to find platforms that work to do that. I feel blessed. I always say I get to work in the best sandbox in the world because the four guys I work for play as a band.
Yeah.
And we use Pro Tools to record.
Yeah.
So, other than obvious intro tapes and things like that, we use Pro Tools to record. And I think all of us who've been around the guys for a long time love that thing that they're a band.
So
They're those
Metallica
same
still
four
plays
guys that were
all live,
down the
though?
block
No
all live.
tracks? No tracks other
The
than
only
intros and
tracks you
stuff.
hear are obviously tracks. They're
Oh, wow.
that are intros to the show. They
That's
play live.
impressive. That's really, really
And I
impressive.
think
I
we
didn't
all
know
love
that.
that. Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly do.
The
Yeah.
vocals, everything, it's all live.
That is really
Including
interesting.
the clunkers.
So few bands are doing that now, as you know. Like even the bands that we think are doing all live, you
It's
know, there's
stunning how many people are
Well, you know, I don't know if it's rumor or what, but like the stuff that was coming out last year about Motley Crue, where the entire every bass
I
track
don't know.
was all
Yeah,
done on track. It
I don't know
wasn't
what
played
booked it.
live and stuff. Yeah, I don't know
Can't
either.
comment on it. Don't want to know
No,
about
me
it.
neither. That was part of that.
I've been involved in some shows years ago
Yeah.
where there was a lot of that, and I always thought that's wrong. That's just me, right? I'm not
Me too.
pontificating to anyone. I just felt like,
Yeah.
whoa, that's
It just
weird.
feels really inauthentic, you know,
But I like
unauthentic or
live
whatever.
music,
Yeah. But I mean, you can understand it, and I'm not suggesting this is who you were talking about, but you can understand when it's Madonna or Shakira or, you know, somebody who really is doing this super intense dancing and jumping around and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's hard to hit, you know, every.
Absolutely. If
Yeah.
you watch Janet Jackson, it's like, whoa,
Yeah,
how are you
yeah.
going to sing and be able to breathe to
There
move
is some
like that?
truth to
So
that, right?
I
There
get
is
it,
some truth to
and it's
that.
an entertainment thing. I saw the I remember when NSYNC was in their heyday and that kind of stuff, and I thought, these are fantastic shows. They're
Yeah.
not Eric Clapton playing something for you, but they're
No.
fantastic shows.
Yeah. Yeah, and I kind of like the Eric Clapton thing, you know? Like I've always been one who loves live music, you know? And
Right.
you know, I have some fairly unpopular thoughts on the size of some of the shows and how distracting they are, you know, to the band. And you know, Mark Brickman was saying to me one day, he had just gone out and seen the Stones when he was on the podcast, and you know, the one with the four iPhones behind them, the big video screens that looked like iPhones. And he said, you know, the problem was those big screens made Mick Jagger look small. And I completely got what he was saying, you know, like if they were IMAG, it's one thing, you know, but when there's a bunch of visual stuff going on, and it's why I have mixed feelings on the U2 thing, the Sphere. You know, it's spectacular, but I haven't seen it live. I just saw it on video, and when I watched the first video of it, I had to sit for like 30 seconds trying to find Bono. I couldn't find him. You know, where is the stage? Where is the singer? You know, and that to me is just, that's not seeing a band.
I think as a designer, that's part of the challenge. I
It
think
is.
it certainly is first and foremost in my thinking of stuff we do now. That's coming from a guy who has a pretty big show playing stadiums right now,
Yeah.
backing up another big show that played stadiums, backing up a big show that played arenas and stuff. But I think people want to have a spectacular experience,
Yeah.
but for my core kind of thinking and design, first and foremost has to be the band.
You know, and I
And
would
that's
say
important to me.
it's going to sound like I'm blowing smoke, Dan, but you've done a tremendous job of it. Like for you, the show is big, but the band is always, you never have to look for the band. You can find the band quite easily.
Well, that's a
And
huge compliment because that's to me
The band is central on your big designs, you know? Like I remember the one where the guy fell out of the truss and things were blowing up and all that stuff. I forget what that was, but I'm close with John Broderick, and I was hanging out at front of house with him, and he didn't tell me what was going to happen or anything. And I was like, "Holy shit, John! Jesus, we got to do something," you know? And I'm like looking for radios and stuff so I can help. And he's like, "Settle down, man." But, you know, that show, like you know, it was almost like a rehearsal because the show seemed so secondary, but it was such an incredible show, the lights and video and everything, right? You
Yeah,
know,
John
it's
did a
not in the
beautiful
way.
job on that show. That was a that was the high end. What the heck was it? Studio color.
Lots of them.
Yeah, and we had 108 of them.
From Obies, I think, wasn't it?
I believe they came from Obies. Yeah, I think
Because
Wiseman was at Obies
you're,
then.
yeah, no. Wiseman was so Wiseman and I both started at
Wiseman
High
was at
End
High
Systems.
End,
We started at
right.
High End the same day. And it was during right when you were getting ready to go out with that show.
Right,
And
and that's where the wash color wash beam, what was it? Anyhow, it was John did a great job on that
Studio
show.
Colors, yeah. Yeah, Studio
Studio Color,
Colors.
yeah,
Yeah.
it was a great show.
But again,
Yeah,
like
I mean the
every
biggest
time I've seen
compliment I get, I
Metallica.
love the first review I read of M72 when we opened in Amsterdam. The first English speaking review I found was talked about the making the stadium feel intimate. And
Exactly.
that's you know, we're trying to make a club, but how do you reach 80,000 people and make it a club? Well, that's the magic, right? I mean, I don't know if there's magic, if I'm good at something. I always love reading intimate. I always love, you know, I always love elegant and simplicity and things like that. And I mean, there's no simplicity in the show we're doing right now, but we're trying to make it so that people can have an experience with the band. And not every band is doing that. Not every band, that's not the goal of every band. And you have to design in context. When I'm working with a corporate client, maybe they want that, maybe they don't. What are we trying to do here? What's your message? And certainly in my world, you know, that's why I love working in the round, because I was that kid who went to concerts. So the only way you can take the worst seats in the house and make them twice as good is move the stage. So let's move the stage to the middle and give everybody a good shot at this thing. And it creates some magic that if the presenter or entertainer can work in that environment, can create some real magical moments. And you know, with Metallica, it's an interesting thing because we're working with a long-term fan base. You know, I think we're probably there may be some four generation people. There certainly are three generation people in the audience.
That is
And
incredible, really.
where did your experience begin? Where did your journey with the Metallica family start? And what's meaningful to you? Because the guy who found Metallica on M72 isn't the same guy who found Metallica on Ride the Lightning. And how do we make the show special for all those people so that everybody who comes can have an experience? And I think we found some great magic. I work with, you know, I mean, we've been blessed with great sound people. Currently, Greg Price is just crushing it. Rob Koenig is my partner in
Rob's
crime. I
awesome.
like to say I do the architecture and Rob does the art. And we've been able to create great things together. And I've hopefully given him the layout and the tools and the number of instruments and all those things. And we go through long processes sweating through it. Gene McAuliffe, our video director, is stunning. Dave, the guy who puts the stuff on the screens in time, because we're not running the time code. We're not doing all of the cues are manual. So
That's
all the
wild.
videos are cut into
That's
little
awesome.
tiny snips. So if the band's playing a little faster, slower, the cues work. And Dave Leonard is stunning. And you know, Joe Cabrera and Cat West, the folks who program the show. And we have this magical team that we're trying to create that journey. We're trying to create a narrative. So no matter when you join the Metallica family, to use Hetfield's words, we have something there that's going to bring you along and make you feel special that you're having a
That's really cool.
one-to-one relationship with the band while you're having this huge communal social relationship watching something you love. But I'm
So what?
lucky I get to work for a great band.
Yeah, for a long time now too. So
Yeah.
the where you know, I read somewhere that you're like a big fan of art, like specifically Michelangelo type of art or whatever. And so does that is that part of the inspiration?
Absolutely. I think, art, architecture, certainly drive a bunch of what I'm doing. I'm always looking at architecture. I'm looking at things, and trying to find a different point of entry, if you will. I don't want to do, so I have this picture that Jim Marshall took, which is the inside gatefold of the Woodstock event. It was taken upstage center at Woodstock, pointed out at the crowd. And it's the gatefold from the album thing. I actually have a print of it that Jim Marshall did, and it's signed and whatever. And he's a great photographer of a segment of our history. And you have a band on stage. There's a turntable stage, which I'm told didn't work at Woodstock. It worked once and fell apart, but somebody like Chipmunk or someone like that had this idea: we can do these changeovers faster if we have this turntable. It didn't work because it was too heavy and whatever. I don't know the whole story of that, but
Sounds like a
and
good idea, though.
you've got this turntable. We figured out how to do it now, but we have this turntable, and you've got some PA column stacks, and there's a little bit of lighting, but the lighting never worked because they couldn't get the roof together because they moved the site too quickly. And you got the spotlight towers, and you got this crowd in front of it. And I look at that and I think, that's a long time ago. We have to do something better to deliver this relationship of band and audience. Because, like with Metallica, the show is about the band driving some energy, spilling the energy into the crowd amplifying it, sending it back to the band, giving them a kick in the pants, the band then re-amplifying it, sending it back to the crowd. And that cycle is a Metallica show. So, as a designer,
Always has been.
what can I do to not get in the way of that? It's a funny approach that I take. I had James really confused explaining it to him. I was like, I don't want to get in the way of that. You see, because they do that by themselves. I'm trying to create a great platform for them to have an interaction with their fans. Nobody's buying a ticket to see me, right? They're
What a
buying a
great
ticket to
point.
see James and Lars and Kirk and Rob. Okay, so how do I create a platform and get Rob Koenig and Gene and Dave and Greg Price and our monitor guys and all, like, this whole thing? How do we make this environment so the band can do what they do at the best possible level it can happen? Because if we do our job well, the band will do theirs. And so it's a really fun environment to work in.
You know, they're one band that, like, you know, if I had to describe a live Metallica show, you know, with one word, it'd probably be energy, you know, and like that energy is two directions. Like you said, it's the fans feeding off the
Right.
band feeding off the fans. And like even and I'm sure you were heavily involved in this process, but the thing that you guys did during COVID with like the I don't remember the
That
number,
was me.
but two or
That
three
was me.
thousand video two
That
or
was
three
me.
thousand little
Oh, yeah.
video
Yep.
things. And you know, like Hetfield was going, you right there, Bob in Wisconsin or whatever, right? And I mean, what a like I hated virtual shows. I hated them with a passion.
And we
That
didn't want to
one
do that.
was incredible.
Right. We didn't
That
want
one
to do
was so
that.
cool. Wiseman
And
actually is the one who I think invited me into that or something. I don't
yeah,
remember how I got in.
we wanted to do something different. My work in the corporate world is with tech people, so I knew what we could do. I found some people who could help me do it, and the folks at Firefly were amazing in pulling it off. I mean, you call a company like, "Can you do this?" "Oh yeah, we can do that. We can do that." Not everybody delivers, and they hit it out of the park. And as the band was walking into that four-sided video wall enclosure, they looked at me like, "Is this going to work, or is this going to be whatever?" And I was like, "All you need to do is go play for a minute." The longest time that I talked to Lars about this, and we determined that the longest time in their history that Metallica had not played live in front of their fans was between the show prior to that and that show.
Really?
And
Wow.
so
That's crazy.
I knew that the band was desperate to get in front of their fans. I don't mean desperate like freaking out about it, but they are a live band that thrives on their audience and having that communication. You called it energy. I call it communication.
Yeah,
okay?
It is.
They're communicating back and forth. And I assumed in the middle of COVID that the Metallica family was in the same place trying to get to Metallica.
Yeah.
And so I looked at the guys and I said, just go play. And they walked out there and 15 seconds into it, you could see the look on their faces. We're playing live in front of our fans. And it was a special, special, it was a very special event.
Well, because let's
Again,
face it.
Great, great, great technical team. Mm-hmm. I am so fortunate to work with the people I work with.
Yeah. Most of those sucked so bad, though.
I wish we had time to do a roll call because nobody does any of this stuff by themselves.
Most
great
of those
come from great, great, great teams. And I
you're
am
right.
blessed. I've mentioned a couple
no,
of
right.
those, but I have so fortunate to work with the people I work
well,
with.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Metallica is the top of the food chain. Obviously, you get to pick whoever you want to work with at this point, I'm guessing. But, you know, again, I can't.
You know, we have a lot of home. I've got to compliment some of my guys. We've got a lot of homegrown talent. We've got a lot
oh,
of folks
hell yeah.
that we came together. And we found a way to make 1 + 1 = 3.
Yeah.
And then we found a way to make 1 + 1 + 1 = 4. And then we found a way to make 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 = 7.
Yeah.
And I'm real proud of it.
Well, and you keep just going like this, like you keep raising the bar. Everything you guys do, every new tour, every whatever, you know, regardless of
thank you
what
the
album does, the tours are incredible. You know, every single one
that's,
of them.
That's
I mean,
really kind.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not blowing smoke. I wish I had something to complain about. Like even your virtual show, like I said, I can't state it enough. They all sucked. I hated every virtual show I saw because number one, there was no energy and there shouldn't be. Like a band is sitting there playing to cameras. It's really hard to do, especially when you're a band like Metallica. You know, you're a rock band that is like rah, in your face rock. Right. And, but, you know, the way that you guys did that gave them that energy because they had people giving them feedback on these screens,
right.
You know, and I saw like Tony Robbins
that,
did that. Tony Robbins did that. He created that whole studio, right?
Yeah. That communication is the deal.
That was very cool. I really, again, it's the only one that I thought really did it well. And I told the guys at Fireplay that and it was done well. Bravo. Sorry, going back to the creative process. So you were saying that art and architecture, and I'm guessing architecture is like the shape of the trussing, the lines and things like that. That's where that comes into play
I
would guess.
A lot of it in what I'm trying to do is proportions.
Mm.
You know, okay, so you get a clever idea. How do we make it so it fits in the building correctly? We had a really rough rehearsal schedule on M72 and never really got to do production rehearsals the way I wish we could have.
Yeah.
And I was really nervous, not a little bit. I was petrified when we were starting the first night. And I was... If you do this, you understand pressure and nerves at a different level.
Yeah.
Especially something on the scale of what this thing was. And I just was like, I don't know if we have this. And it's the first time I've ever felt like that. I've done other things where I didn't know till I saw it put up. When we did S&M 2 with the rings at the Chase Center, I walked in and I just stuck my head, the rings were all about 10 feet off the ground. They were just hanging there with a little bit of test pattern on them. I just poked my head around the vomitory and looked at them. I went, oh no, this is going to be fantastic. I knew we had something magic.
Yeah.
And this one, I did not. And right before the show started the first night, and I was physically nervous.
Yeah.
And I looked at the thing and I went, man, this stadium is really small. And I just went, oh, okay. All right,
yeah.
We got this.
That's cool.
Because it's the proportions and trying to get it all to fit right. Because again, nobody's coming to see what I did. Everybody's coming and everybody sees what I did. Everybody sees what the creative process was. Everybody sees what Rob does every night. Everybody sees what Gene does every night.
Yeah.
But they're not buying a ticket for that. We're
Yeah,
just
yeah.
supporting these four guys who do what they do,
Yeah.
and it's about getting the proportions right, and then hopefully you come up with something a little bit clever, like how to put speakers in a place where there's no ceiling.
Yeah. So when you're doing in the round, this is a really dumb question because I've just never been involved in the technical aspects of a system for in the round, but are you using twice as much audio or is it more than that?
Well, we did something very unique on this show, which is also you can blame on me. Greg Price is an incredible partner to work with, and I have for years wanted to create near field monitors in an 80,000 seat stadium. So the
Yeah.
first thing we had to figure out how to do was create stereo sound throughout a stadium. So we have a very large PA trying to create stereo images, and we're capturing about 85% of the seats in stereo.
Wow. So is that just
Which
a lot more smaller speakers? Is that how that works or?
it's something different than putting up a big pile of speakers and pointing them down the field and turning them up really
Yeah.
loud. And which is my reference to that Woodstock picture.
Yeah.
And so what we've done is we've created stereo imaging, left, right, left, right, left, right, as you go around the stadium. The image might be backwards, but it's still a stereo image,
Huh.
which opens up a ton of things because it allows Greg to do a bunch of the soundscape is this big stereo image instead of this mono thing that you're trying to ram everything down this pipe.
Yeah.
And and Greg is, it's fan. We've been blessed with Metallica. Mick Hughes was there forever and a tremendous sound engineer. He retired,
Yeah.
and Greg is there, and he's a great partner to work with. And we kind of took this thing on and created this stereo image around the football
Cool.
stadium.
Yeah. So when you have, new album, I'm guessing, you sit down with the band, they tell you what the album's all about and what vibe it is or theme or whatever. How does your whole design process work? Like how far in advance of the tour actually going out? How much is the band involved? When do you get the rest of the team involved? Like what's that look like?
Oof, that's a tough question. I'm always thinking about what's next.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking about what's next. I've got a project that may or may not happen with another band, and I've got all sorts of kind of ideas floating around with that and what it might be. And with these guys, I kind of know, give or take some number of months, what the cycle of where we're going to be, what we're doing, when's the next recording cycle, this and that. So when they started M72 recording, I know that coming out of that is going to be a tour. So the process really starts then. It's
Yeah.
coming up with a lot of iterations, talking about stuff, eventually getting some tracks to listen to and see, what are we doing, and trying to think about what we've done in the past and where we're going. This one was a pretty big curveball because it came up where we're going to go play stadiums in the round. It's like, okay, well, everybody understands what the scale of that is, right? Let's not
Yeah.
have anybody get surprised halfway in because this is going to
Yeah.
be huge. And the sound thing is something, the stereo sound thing is something we've wanted to get to for a long time. And I think we will be, if we go back indoors, we have a masterful plan for how that's going to be. The folks at Meyer Sound, starting with Helen and John and Josh Freeman and Bob McCarthy and Michael Maxim, and I mean, you want to talk about having family to work with. It's
Yeah.
unbelievable to have people like that to work with. And so we have a plan for that. But one of the big things on this was trying to make the audio special.
Yeah.
We always have band. Mick Hughes suffered in this thing where he had unbelievable sounding shows, and people would say, well, they sound really good for Metallica. And John Broderick suffered for years with this. It's a really good show for Metallica.
Yeah.
And so. One of my goals has been to break that mold because the band is a great band, and I just want it to be a great show.
Yeah.
I don't want you to say it's the best Metallica show you ever saw. I want you to say it's the best show you ever saw.
Yeah.
And so messing with the audio, getting the lights in the right place on this thing, getting all that stuff proportionally correct, getting the screens correct, and having something that we think is special, that, you know,
So,
we don't want to be anybody else's show.
yeah.
Then I take some of those ideas and talk to the band a little bit. On this particular one, I got a pretty big curveball because something I'd wanted to do forever, one of the guys in the band was willing to do. And I was really taken aback by it. I said, well, if you're willing to go for it, this is what I'd really like to do.
Yeah.
And I've never pitched it to you because I didn't think you would do it.
Because
And he said,
why?
well, it's working really well so far, so let's go there. And I said, okay, well, rehearsals were interesting because all of a sudden he'd realized what he'd committed to and realized, well, this is going to be hard.
Was that
But
because of the
I work for a
scale of
band that
it,
works
or
real hard. Pardon me?
what was the concern? The scale, the
On the
cost, the
World Wired Tour, for the first time ever, I moved Lars.
Ooh.
And we put him at the end of the snake pit. And at the
Okay.
end of the show, we had Lars come up and play at the end of the snake pit. We'd never moved. Lars had moved a little bit, a moving drum kit back in 90 on the Black Album tour, which he really, to this day, will talk about how much he hated it.
Yeah.
And after that experience, he never moved. I started with him in 94, so we'd never been able to move Lars.
Yeah.
So I moved him to the end, and we had a drum kit come up, and he played right next to the people, and rehearsals were very difficult with it. And Peter Mensch, my dear friend from the management company, who we have a rather animated relationship. He's a great he's had some great design ideas himself. Peter Mensch came up with the snake pit, which I
Really?
believe is the biggest change in the stage since the Romans raised the Greek stage off the floor to put it on a platform. And people were never in the stage before. That was
The
Peter
snake pit
on an
was
airplane.
actually like a little VIP
Yeah, and
pit
it
in the
put
center of the
people
stage,
in the
right?
pit. And that
Yeah.
became, if you look at any TV show now or anywhere else, they're all full of having people in the stage. And that
Yeah,
was
yeah.
Peter.
That's
Uh,
true,
and,
huh?
I, and so Peter thought it was crazy to move Lars and put him down there and all this nonsense and blah, 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 blah. And I said, just watch. And Lars went down there the first night and played, and he had an experience he'd never had before. I mean, he's literally a couple of feet from 80,000 people at Foro Sol in
That's
Mexico
wild.
City.
That's wild.
So that developed, and then as we moved into the festivals from that cycle, he started opening the show down there. That's how much he enjoyed it.
Really?
And then he kind of felt like, well, after I moved back to the stage, the energy doesn't seem the same. I said, well, let's do this. And so that's where the circle with the four drum kits came up.
Is the big challenge there security or like
No,
our
I think one of the other things, we're fortunate. We're capable of designing the show. We keep the crowd in mind. We have very, very few problems with crowd and stuff.
Yeah.
Another great part of our team, but also the design is meant, when you take a stage and make it 400 feet around, you have a 1200 foot diameter. So you're able to create a lot more front row seats than you can. When you take a snake pit and stick it out into the audience and you add 160 feet of front row seats, it eliminates a lot of pressure on the barricade and those kind of problems.
Right,
And
I see.
so some of this stuff is practical. We don't talk about this a lot, but some of this stuff is practical as well as theatrical staging things. The reason when we do the festivals that we go so wide and create that is to make all these front row seats and stop people from pushing this incredible pressure into the front center of the stage. And as you are painfully aware as I am, there's been tragedies in
Yeah.
our industry because people haven't been able to eliminate that pressure.
Yeah.
And so it's something always first and foremost in everything we do.
Yeah, that's good. So, again, back to this process, because I'm just curious, a show the size of M72, how far in advance, how far back, like you're
Probably
touring,
took
let's say
about
tour starts March 15th of 2023. When do you start, or
M72 started in earnest. Okay, forget about my musings about this or that. I was actually working on an indoor show because I thought we were going to go indoors.
Oh,
And I was
okay.
playing with the cylinders for an indoor show,
Ah.
trying to figure out how to do something. I was really going down these rabbit holes of trying to figure out how am I going to make this work? Let me see. I like shapes. So
Yeah.
I had these cylinder things. And I said they were going to go in the round. And then it was like, okay, well, how do I take these cylinders and make them work in a stadium? In earnest, it took about a year. And then there was a pretty big shift in the stage element. And then, we got into this thing when we played the night before the Super Bowl back in San Francisco of playing without a roof. I'm like work with the with this band that says, well, if it's raining, the crowd gets wet, so we'll get wet.
Wow.
We don't need to be protected.
That's
We're
cool.
one with our fans.
Huh.
And so we got into this thing of not using a roof. Well, how do you play in a stadium without a roof? And there's a lot of
Yeah,
engineering
that's
and some
challenging.
brilliant people.
Yeah,
The
in the
brilliant
round,
people
in
at
a stadium, no roof. Yeah, where do you hang
brilliant people
lights?
at Tate, brilliant people at Stageco.
Yeah.
Again, I can't say enough about the team. Chad Kaler, our rigger, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So
Well, what does a rigger do when it's in the round in a stadium with no lights hanging above the stage, you know?
well, those little towers that are holding up all that light, which kind of work with the crib towers, if you look at the album artwork and stuff, and you'll see that the towers kind of work in that whole thing, and the circle theme carries through the whole thing. But those lights and the sound and all that stuff is rigged on those towers.
Yeah, of course,
And
yeah.
then there's a catenary system of cables that hangs the speakers that cover the field.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch for Chad and his team to
Yeah.
do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just different, you know. It's not like, you know, rigging points in the ceiling.
Nope, we're hanging stuff where there's no
So
hanging points.
those towers were quite a creation then, right? Like that was quite an engineering
Yeah,
feat, I'm
and
guessing.
the engineering was, we went to Stageco and they're like, you're crazy. But they told me I was crazy when I wanted to paint all the towers white for the World Wired Tour too. And then they sent me a picture of Chanel doing the same thing because they saw our show and thought it looked good. So I thought that was a nice compliment. But the folks at Stageco they're at this level, we're able to work with really, really talented people who have worked with us enough to go, that guy's crazy. Let's figure out how we're going to do this.
You know, that's got to be a
The
really
support
cool
from
thing.
Winky and Adam Davis over at
Yeah, of
Tate,
course.
like, I don't know. We're really fortunate. We have a great, great team. As I said, none of this happens from any guy doing something. Yeah, okay. If I set all humility aside, I can say it was a clever idea or something like that. But to make the clever idea sit in Amsterdam that first night in the stadium in Amsterdam, it takes an enormous number of people firing on all cylinders at a really, really high level.
But it's got to be really cool to be Metallica, because you could go to Intel and say, hey, we need this cool technology for our tour this year. Or you could go to Apple Computers, or you could go to like whoever you want, and you're going to be able to get a meeting at a pretty high level to create something unique for you to use
Right.
on your
The
tour this
problem
year.
that we have is that we only want one. Everything we
Yeah,
do is
it ain't
bespoke.
going to
So
be
if you go to
profitable.
Apple or Intel or those people, they're like, well, how many of these are we going to sell? One.
Yeah, but
Oh,
it
you're
goes
never
to their
going to be able to
marketing
afford it.
budget. It goes to their
Right.
marketing budget, because they'll do 1,000 commercials that show, look, this is
Right.
the thing on
A little bit. And
Metallica.
Metallica is not big with sponsorship and things like that. So we run into some things there. But yeah, we're. It's a great bunch. It's a great band to be able to work with, and there's great resources available. And we have a great management structure. And, people like Tony DiCiaccio figuring out, are you out of your mind? Do you understand what this is going to cost? I told you it's going to be big, it's going to be expensive. And he's got to figure out how we're going to make this thing actually, how to take this kind of crazy idea and hopefully make it make sense, or better yet, make dollars. Just getting the machine to be running correctly is very challenging at the level that this thing plays at. And it takes everybody. It takes the folks at Q Prime. It takes Tony. It takes Mark. It takes all the people at HQ and Metallica
Of course,
that
yeah.
are, there's people that never experience the joy of the house lights turning off and the roar of the crowd who are such big contributors to this thing. I have to thank them because they all make this possible.
Of course, yeah. Well, and then you know as well as anybody, because you've been a production manager for a long time as well, it needs to come down and it needs to go back up again
Right.
tomorrow, you know?
Right.
So,
Right.
like, you can design whatever you want, but if you don't have the budget to build it, or if you don't have the ability to get it in and out of a building, you know, and then you got to start, well, you guys probably leapfrog steel or something, I'm guessing, right?
We've actually got it for, they're not playing that much. You're playing, you know, they're doing two shows in a city with a
Okay.
different set list every night. So there's no repeat songs,
Wow.
there's no repeat lighting cues or video cues. It's two
Interesting. Two
distinct
totally different
individual shows.
sets. That's
And believe me,
wild.
that's a big challenge right there.
Yeah, no
Not
kidding.
just for the crew, but for the band. And so the schedule works out okay with we're not doubling that much gear. We're able to move the production and not double that. And you know, tower bases are doubled or tripled sometimes, and the towers we've got, there's so much of the thing is bespoke. I'd be really honest, we can't afford to build two of them or three of them.
Yeah. I mean, that stuff's
So,
all expensive.
and that's where, you know, the team that puts the whole thing together, even figuring out the routing is a huge part of making it possible.
Yeah. How soon were you guys out after COVID?
We did a movie theater thing during COVID. We did a, there was somebody who had this idea to do drive-in theaters. And
Yeah.
we filmed the show at, they wanted us to use one of these XR stages.
Yeah.
And we looked at some of that stuff and went, yeah, that we're not, that's not Metallica. So we went up
No.
to a winery in Napa in the middle of COVID in a full lockdown. We bought out a wing of a hotel, a motel, and you know, did the whole thing testing every day back when the swabs went all the way to back of
Yeah,
your head and it felt like somebody was killing
exactly.
you.
Those
And we
things.
tested every day, went through that whole protocol. We did that. That played in drive-ins. Then the next, we had done S&M 2 was the last time they played live. We played that show at the winery with no people. We just filmed it. And I was stunned at how the band performed.
Really?
And we talked a lot about visualizing their fan base, and they pulled it off. Then we did the show you referenced for the
Yeah.
fundraiser for their benefit for their foundation. And that's when I knew we had to have people on screens.
Yeah.
We had to have that, or they weren't going to be able to do what they did at the theater. And then we went out, I think the next spring. I don't remember the exact dates, but I think the next spring we were doing
2021,
live
yeah.
shows, so probably 2021.
Yeah.
And very careful and
And then it just
not
went
flawless.
batshit crazy after that. You know, it's just
It
been
kind of been
nuts ever since.
nonstop, but you know, at the end of the day, it's been nonstop since I got here in '94. And about 2 weeks into that tour, when we were doing it, I looked at them. I said, "You guys, this isn't a new tour. You just took a longer break since the last one, because that's just it's
They just
they're
all blend
always in
together.
motion. You know,
Yeah.
Lars has got a mind that's just it's always going. You know, next year and the year after that, and he's thinking out. He's really creative and has an incredibly he's smart as hell, and he's really creative. And the combination is really dangerous because
Yeah.
he knows where he's going creatively, and he can project that out into what the practicality of delivering it to in the future is.
Well, and what does that look, what does that look like as far as, like, does the band just agree whenever Lars comes up with a wild idea?
You know what? That's their world. The four of them are very much like a family. You
Yeah.
know, I mean, you think about it, you know, Lars, James, and Kirk have been together forever, and really Rob's been there now so long that he's been there forever.
Yeah.
And most marriages don't last as long as those guys have been together.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
they have their process, and you know, it's not that Lars dictates what's going on. It's just he's got a vision. Hey, we can do this. And we I don't think that we ever really hit the marks. It's not like a prescription of next month this, next month this, next month this. He's just thinking ahead. If you listen to an interview with Lars and they ask him what his favorite album is, and James as well, they'll always tell you the next one. They
Yeah.
don't know what the next one's going to be, but they know there's going to be a next one, and they don't know exactly when it's going to happen. But they have a kind of a thing like, well, we're going to do this, and then we want to go play here, and we want to go to these places, and we want to take the show here. And when we get all that done, and of course, none of that ever works on schedule because availabilities and routing and shipping, blah, 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 blah. And then when we get through all this stuff, maybe we'll start kind of thinking about another album cycle. And it's a, it's,
Yeah.
it's been remarkable to be a part of. That's the best
Yeah,
thing,
it sounds like it. Are you ever surprised by their longevity? Like, I guess the problem working so long for a band like Metallica is you have to stay as fit as them. Like you have to be right there alongside them, right? Regardless of whatever your age is versus their age or whatever. Like,
Surprised? No, I think I'm more impressed with it. I look at the
yeah.
way they take care of themselves, maybe better now than they did when they were younger, out of
Yeah.
necessity.
Yeah, I
You
think all of
know,
us.
I look at the commitment they have to playing and delivering a show. And the one of the things that has always humbled me with them is their relationship with the audience and the precious level they hold that at. And the fact that we don't have a B show to take to Bismarck. I'm not picking on Bismarck. And I notice I didn't say which state. There's a lot of
Yeah.
Bismarck.
Oh, are
We
there?
don't
I
have
only
a
know one.
B show to take to Bismarck. The Bismarck show is the same show that plays New York or Chicago or wherever. Now there's some
Yeah.
logistical things that become impractical to try to, you
Right.
can't take that stadium show and put it into a place that doesn't have the infrastructure to deal
Right.
with it.
But
But there isn't a B show.
they'll put out the
And
same energy though.
the other thing that is, it's a show. It is a
Yeah.
dramatic, big Metallica show. And many times Lars is like, make sure it's Metallica.
Yeah.
There isn't a B show. And the other thing is, I've seen them sick. I've seen them going through personal crisis in life. I've seen them with kids being born. All of the things that in 30 or 40 years you go through. I've never seen them phone it in when they get to the top step of the
Oh,
stage.
really? That's cool.
I've seen them, I've had a difficult time getting them up those stairs sometimes. But when they hit the top step, it's on.
Yeah.
And that to me is that's the money. That's
But
the magic.
there's no end. Like there's no like, okay,
I
we're
don't
gonna
know.
do this
I don't know.
until
I'm
here.
not sure. I don't know how much I have. I'm an old
Well,
man. I don't
no, but
know.
I was gonna ask you that. Like, do you plan a life after Metallica, or is it when Metallica stops, I stop. That's my plan, you know? And I
I
know
don't
that's a
know. I mean,
personal
I
question.
would hope that, I hope I have the opportunity to, that they would keep me around that long. I don't take any of
Yeah,
it for granted. I've been
of
very
course,
fortunate
yeah.
in this whole thing. But I think that as long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing, the
Yeah.
team we have right now, the creative energy when we're on, that's what I love. Like at this point, it's not that it's not interesting now because we're going to go back and redo a bunch of things. There'll be a bunch of, I'm guessing Lars is going to insert a bunch of new songs for this year. And that, so that will start the creative process. But when we're in sync as a team working together on trying to create a show, that's that kid who was sitting and watching Pink Floyd going, I wonder how we do this. That's
That's
the
really, really
moment of,
cool.
oh, this is how we do this. Watch this.
Yeah.
I love when I have a design together that's kind of, it's no longer a nebulous gas cloud, if you will. It's no longer scribblings. It's like, hey, this is, we're gonna send it to Rob and I'll send it to Gene. And I love that first text back, WTF, exclamation point, exclamation, exclamation point. What is wrong with you? What are you
Yeah.
thinking?
Yeah. Well, I think you
Okay,
have
here's
to
what,
think big, you
okay,
know, with
guys,
that
here's what I'm
band.
thinking, and
Yeah.
those moments, that's magic. When Rob comes back to me and goes, I want to use this light and here's why, and this is gonna do this. And I'm like, well, I like that, but what if we did this? Oh, no, we're not gonna do that. We'll do this.
Yeah.
And it's that same process I talked about in the Metallica show of taking the energy, taking the communication, and building in a positive way. And we're lucky we have a team. And I've been on teams where it's not this way, where
Yeah.
everybody is pushing towards the good of everybody else and for the good of the show.
Yeah.
Nobody's
That's
selling
so
them,
great.
no one's selling anyone out to kind of elevate their position at someone else's expense.
Yeah.
It's pretty special. So we try to keep that going for as long as we can.
I have a super important question for you.
Here.
Did the Metallica Lego set ever get approved?
I don't know if it made it or not. I think Gene found that thing and he started populating it. And I was blown away. That guy has what we call the Cube Show, which was the worldwide indoor show.
Okay.
He has the what we call the five screen show, which was the worldwide outdoor show.
Yeah.
And the tower, the M72 tour, He's got the whole thing. He's got Mick and Legos. Like, it's unbelievable.
That's wild.
That's too much time in the basement with Flamin' Hot Cheetos and Red Mountain Dew.
No kidding. But somebody was telling me that there's over 10,000 ideas that were
I
submitted or
think,
something.
well, you have to get 10,000 likes for Lego to consider it, I think.
Oh, I see.
And so Gene took this thing. We all started reposting it because we all cracked up when we found it.
No
Like, we
kidding.
at first we were laughing about it. Then I started drilling down on how much of this stuff the guy had, and I was like, this is unbelievable. So we tried to push him over the 10,000 number to get Lego to consider it.
Oh,
I have
wow.
not heard whether we got
That'd be
there or whether
really
he did. We
cool.
were close. We were really, really close.
That'd be
I
cool.
think last I heard we were at 9,500.
You know,
And I'm
one of
sure
the.
then there'd be some logistics involved in that. There'd probably
Yeah.
be some lawyers involved in making that deal.
The funny thing about Metallica is, like, as popular as they've gotten, and the longevity, and the multiple generations, and how big they are, they've never really jumped the shark. You know, like, they've never. I've never seen them, anyways. Maybe they did, but I've never seen them, go on America's Got Talent or, some of the things that some bands have done where I call it jumping the shark. So did the Fonz.
Well, yeah, I think they are underrated in a lot of ways. And I'm not talking about as virtuoso players. I'm talking about as a band, as a creative group of four guys. They have taken incredible risks. They have shown their truth to the world in video documentary form in a place that very few people would go. They have shown their truth. I don't call it vulnerability. They have shown their truth to the world, unabashed. They have taken on musical projects like S&M, and then coming back and doing S&M 2. They have collaborated with Lou Reed and done some things. They took a hard turn to do Saint Anger in the middle of great turmoil. And I think eventually Saint Anger will be recognized for the passion that is in Saint Anger. Maybe the audio quality is a little rough sometimes, but I think it will stand the test of time over that over time. And they've taken incredible risks to turn things, but what they haven't done, what I have never seen them do, is be untrue to themselves. And that's that thing about never phoning it in when they're on stage. When you're talking to a band member and you know they're sick, and they go out and they do an incredible job, and you're talking to them after the show, and you're like, man, how did you do that? And they look you straight in the eye, and from their heart, they tell you, I was really dying up there. And I looked down in the front row and I saw this young kid there. He was there with his dad, obviously, because he was too young to be there alone. And he was just rocking his ass off. And
That's
I figured if
cool.
that kid can rock, I can rock.
That is awesome.
Okay? When you
That is
hear
awesome.
that, it's pretty easy to go run through a wall for him.
It's funny because I'm probably the person who original Metallica fans hate because I jumped on the bandwagon on Black Album. I wasn't a fan before
Oh yeah,
that. They
you're
were,
hated. You're hated.
yeah,
I know.
they were a little too heavy. Like I loved Judas Priest. I loved a lot of the heavy bands, but Metallica was just a little too garagey for me before that, right? And it just wasn't the genre that I was into. But Black Album, I just went, wow, this is good. Like because of the production quality on it, and
Oh no,
not because it was hits.
Bob Rock hit it out
Well,
of
and
the
I'm
park. I mean,
Canadian.
come
I'm
on.
Canadian.
He hit it
So,
out of the park. And
so.
the guys hit it out of the park with some songwriting that,
Yeah, Dan,
again, I think will withstand the test of time.
my cousin was Bruce Fairbairn. And
Oh,
so
okay.
my name is Marcel Fairbairn. My cousin is Bruce Fairbairn, or was. He's passed away. But Bruce Fairbairn, Bob Rock had a very good thing going on there in Vancouver. I just thought that album had the sound. It had it,
Oh
and
yeah.
plus a
Oh
ballad, like wow, a Metallica ballad that became like a huge hit and stuff too. But I love that they've reinvented themselves like that. Like they went from being like this sort of garage metal band to being top of the charts, the most successful rock band, one of the most, well, now the most ever probably. But Just incredible. And to have the career that they've had, it's incredible. It's just mind-blowing. So,
It's been
yeah,
a
it's
great
very cool.
journey. You know,
No
I
kidding.
think that they were always more musical than some of the folks that they that they're associated with.
Yeah.
I have so many people come to the show. You know, I'm 66, right? So my friends are like, Metallica, just come see the show. I'll give you some earplugs. Just watch your show. And almost to a person, they come to me after the show. They're like, I had no idea. They're unbelievable.
They were probably tired and worn out by the end of the show, right? It's like
and
a workout.
they had
What just
physical
happened?
therapists on the road with them, not for luxury, for necessity.
No, I meant your friends. I meant the fans
No,
that were there watching.
my friends
They
are,
were probably worn out at the end.
they're like, I had no idea that it's this good, that there's this level of passion.
Yeah, that's
You know, they're
cool.
like, man, the only thing I can compare that to is Springsteen. And I'm like, yeah, because it's from the heart.
Do you still tour?
I go out to a lot of shows. If I have work to do at the shows, if there's something for me to do, yeah, I'm there. We're at the point now in the cycle where if there's nothing for me to do to be there,
You don't go.
I don't need to be there and take up space and be another person to move around and hotel and all that stuff. And I got stuff I'm working on for, we're going to be the foundation will be doing another benefit coming up, and the machine doesn't stop working. The stuff on my plate doesn't stop. So that's a great blessing.
That's very cool. Well, I appreciate you taking so much time today out of your schedule. I know you got a lot going on. You're going back to Europe soon, and it's been very interesting for sure. Like I love it. I love, everybody I meet from your camp are just amazing people, and such a successful machine, It's great.
It's been a great journey. I'm very fortunate to be part of it. I've enjoyed the time with you. I'm glad we got to know you. Drop me an
Yeah,
email on the
likewise.
other stuff,
I will, yeah. I'll
and
email you as soon as we're done here, and if I can help you with that, great. And maybe I'll catch you
If you want to do this
somewhere out
again
on the road.
sometime and come see a
Absolutely.
show, but if you want to do this again sometime and get into specifics, we can talk about
Absolutely. Would love
gear
to.
and stuff like that
Would
and
love
whatever you
to.
want to, It's been
No,
fun. Thanks
I.
for your interest in our show. Thanks for your interest in what I do.
Yeah, I'm very interested, and I'd love to do it again. I'd like to get into some of the specifics on the gear that we were even talking about before we started recording. So yeah, that'd be fun too. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate you.
All right.
And again, if I can ever do anything for you or whatever, just reach out to me.
Same.
You've got my
And
info
same.
now.
I've enjoyed the time, and it's nice getting to know you a
Perfect.
little bit. And let's keep
Awesome.
going.
Thanks so much.